This is Sounds of the Bazaar, broadcasting live from Online Educa 13 in Berlin. Good morning and welcome to the programme. I'm Jenny Hughes, presenting the programme this morning, helped by our guest presenter, Andreas Ausweiter.
Good morning.
Andreas is a guest from the Radioactive Project, which will be broadcasting their own programme just half an hour after we finish. So please tune in and find out what Radioactive are doing. A particular welcome to all those people who are listening at home and in work. And maybe you have the best idea, because the weather in Berlin is truly terrible. It's grey, it's bleak, it's cold, it's wet, and there's a hurricane due. A special good morning to Graham Atwell, who is in his sick bed in Bremen. Those of you who are regulars at Online Educa will realise that usually Graham Atwell is presenting this programme, and I'm not actually Graham Atwell. So good morning, Graham, if you're listening. But the weather outside is pretty rubbish, but inside the conference centre, inside the inside the hotel, it's absolutely fantastic here. There are 2,000 delegates. The atmosphere is great. There's a sense of anticipation, a sense of excitement in the Intercontinental Hotel, which has got to be one of Europe's greatest conference centres. In fact, we've got somebody coming on the programme later on who will actually tell us about what it's like to put Online Educa together. The other people we've got to talk to this morning, we've got somebody from Rosetta Stone, who's going to be talking to us about language development in the technological age. We've got Nick Kearney talking about zombies. We've got guests talking about podcasting, about MOOCs, and some feedback on Online Africa. So I'm going to go over to my first guest. Where's my first guest gone? Here we go. This is Judy Verse from Rosetta Stone. Judy, hello.
Hello, Jennifer. Nice to meet you.
I really want to ask you, with all the technology that we've got now, with translation programs, why do we need to learn languages?
Oh, that's a fabulous question. Matter of fact, it's one that we get a lot. At the end of the day, if you think about just using translation, a Google Translate, you can't form that basic human connection because you're going to be going through a translate device. Or if you've ever used translation on Facebook or whatever, it usually doesn't come out exactly correct. So when you get down to it, the baseline of language is the ability to communicate, and just doing it through electronic devices back and forth doesn't form that human relationship.
Okay, so what are some of the things that you've actually been doing at Rosetta Stone in terms of using technology for language development?
Yeah, two of the really cool things about what we offer. First off is we use technology to simulate immersion. I mean, everybody knows one of the absolute best ways you can learn a language is how a child or a baby learns a language. It's just through being immersed. They connect figures around them, visuals, and it connects with language in their brain, and that's how they develop. So we use technology, the computer, to basically do that. So that's kind of part of it. Yep, but the other part of communicating is the ability to speak and speak correctly and be understood. And through a speech recognition engine that we have, it helps people learn to pronounce words correctly so they can effectively communicate and be understood.
I was at your stall yesterday, and your staff were talking about some of the novel pilot programs that you've got in helping people learn languages, new models of delivery. Can you tell us about some of those?
Yeah, no, and the really exciting thing with technology, there's so many different models of delivery. I mean, from a school perspective, I mean, you could use Rosetta Stone basically as the course. So, for example, if a school wants to offer Mandarin and they don't have a Mandarin teacher, Rosetta Stone could be the course. If it's a school, for example, here in Germany teaching English, got great English teachers in Germany, but this is an opportunity you could blend it into the classroom and you could have Rosetta Stone really focused on helping on the communication and speaking aspect, and the teacher focusing on what they do great in terms of communication and structure and grammar. So it's a great way to tie it all together. I mean, you could either do completely online or a blended approach.
So what does it mean to me? Okay, I don't speak German. Other languages, but not German. So as a brand new German learner, where do I start?
Matter of fact, you're the perfect person to start, because at the end of the day, Rosetta Stone is phenomenal for what we call that blank slate learner, the person who doesn't know anything about the language. And basically, you just start, you download the software, And it starts walking you through very basically. You see pictures, you connect those pictures with words, and you speak it interactively back and forth with the computer.
I'm going to put you on the spot now. How many languages do you actually speak yourself?
Well, the reason I came to Rosetta Stone, because I am the product of an challenge learning Spanish. I took 7 years of Spanish in the U.S. and didn't learn a thing. And I now can say I am actively been learning Spanish, learning it and starting to speak it, which is exciting. And I speak English great.
You speak English great. Yeah, yeah. That's fine. Yeah. Judy, thank you very much indeed.
Thank
now
you.
I'm going to hand over to Andreas, who's going to be talking to Nick Kearney. I don't believe this. He's going to be talking about zombies.
Yeah. Zombies and first of all, welcome to Nick Kearney. Zombies and what's behind that? And you told me in a short briefing, it's about behavior. Tell us more.
Well, yeah, I'm in a games network called Segun, and because of that, I was spending a lot of time with my son watching him play games to get insights about that. One of his favorite games is Call of Duty, and Call of Duty has a version where he spends his time shooting zombies down, and the zombies just keep coming. And the more I sat there thinking about online learning, thinking about the sort of things that are getting talked about here, I see various things that are zombie behaviors amongst the educational technology sector.
Can you give me an example of this?
Yeah, one of them is the ex-MOOC, which is the pedagogy that won't lie down. We did all this 10, 15 years ago, and when we started doing e-learning, we were doing exactly the same kind of pedagogy. It didn't work, it went away, and now it's come back dressed up as the ex-MOOC. And I think that we need to reflect on that. Another thing is the sense of strangeness. When you look at what a lot of people are talking about in this sector at the moment, they're talking about unbundling education. I don't think unbundling is the right word. They're talking about dismembering education. And that takes me back to zombies and the bits that keep falling off them, but they keep coming with the same ideas, which are all about separating limbs, vital parts of an organism, and selling them separately. When in fact, you think about it, that kind of unbundling is impossible if knowledge is located in context. If knowledge is situated and depends on context, you cannot separate out the different elements of the learning experience, like assessment, like guidance, like content, in the way that people are proposing to do. And in fact, when you go out there, you do projects like a project I finished last year called React, which was about re-engaging disaffected, demotivated learners. What you find actually when you apply the sorts of things Jeff Borden in the keynote has been selling as completely new. These are old concepts like motivation, like the need for challenges, like social learning, etc. If you put them together and you let students run with them, work with them, they rebundle education. They produce their own version of what the school is. We don't need to reinvent the school. We just need to reconfigure it.
Okay. Can you present an example of a solution, how it would work better?
Yes, when, for example, when we worked in that particular project with young people who were not getting anything out of the school system at all, what we did was to go in there and say, you have the freedom to do any project you like. You choose the project. Some of them decided, in fact, to do radio. Some of them decided just to do their own radio show. They had to go off and look for the software. They had to look at how you can actually set that up. They had to decide what the content of their program was, but they did it all themselves. The teachers just helped them to find the stuff that they needed to do that. Others did studies of football chants. Another did a study on rap music, etc. But they redefined the classroom according to their own needs and learned how to learn again through that project activity. And that's an example of how, instead of doing it the old way, and instead of just saying this is broken, let's invent something completely different, we took the same space, but we reconfigured it in a different way.
Would you agree if I say discovering the own leads and own developments is a challenge we underestimate?
I think so. I think I think it's one of the problems with that kind of thing is that everybody's heard of project-based learning, of discovery-based learning, etc., etc. And it's almost like you come to a place like this and it's almost like you've heard it all before. But there's not that many people actually putting it into practice in schools, because very often that the rest of it, you've got the teacher motivated, interested in doing it, the students would obviously love it, but the whole system militates against it. So that very often what we need to do to actually do that rebundling is actually to put the organisational and the logistical aspects and curricular aspects of what's going on rather than the classroom space itself.
Okay, thank you. And I will hand over to Jan.
And I'm actually going to hand over to Dirk, who's going to play us some music for 2 minutes. Thank you, Dirk.
Our next guest and speaker is Melanie Campbell, and can you simply short say where you're from?
Yeah, hello, good morning. My name is Melanie Campbell, and I am from Bau ABC Rastrup, which is actually part of Northern Germany training center for construction industries.
Okay, and we're talking about a European project and the work which was going on inside this European project. It's called Layers. What does the title mean?
Okay, Learning Layers is a project about supporting and enhancing informal learning at the workplace with technology. And we are very lucky to be actually one of the two application partners, practical partners or users that are directly involved in this four-year project from the very beginning.
Okay, so what's the objective of Layers?
Okay, Layers is actually supporting exploitation, research, innovation, development and dissemination of technology or open technology for informal learning. So therefore, what is special about Layers is that it is an iterative co-design process with direct end user involvement, and that's really different from other projects.
Okay. You have an objective in terms of you want to do something for people. So what are your people at the Bau ABC will take from it?
Okay, what we will take from it is, first of all, it's reflecting our special competencies we have as a training center, and it's supporting our innovation processes by also offering strategic business modeling through the Layers project, and it's actually helping us to putting hands together actually to develop something that serves our special needs, because our learners are different from academic learners.
Tell me, what makes your learners unique compared to students or usual university and college students?
Well, our learners are more hands-on learners. They are not used to sit in front of a screen or write or talk a lot. they really love to do practical stuff, and they learn by doing. So it's actually a work-orientated learning process.
A workplace-based learning. Okay, thank you very much. Jen, are you ready?
I'm just going to go and have a walk around here because we're being surrounded by delegates and people running exhibition stands. So I think I'm just going to go and talk to some of them. Right. Excuse me, can I just interrupt a moment? What brings you to Educa?
We are from Ministry of Education. We are trying to publish in what we are creating in the Ministry of Education. We are creating to build in some units, learning units, to helping teachers and students.
I think you better tell the listeners what country you are from.
We are from Oman.
From Oman. Yes. And how big is e-learning in Oman?
It's very highly. We are now improving very fastly to be teaching and learning behind the technology, passing with the technology.
It's really nice to see countries outside Europe here at Educa. It's brilliant.
Thank you.
And can I talk to you as well?
Sure.
And can you tell me your name?
Marco Boldini.
And what brings you to Educa, Marco?
We are looking for partnership or potential customers for developing our main business, that is e-learning. We have as well a business unit for developing gaming, and we're leveraging gamification to present e-learning courses a little bit different.
Go see Nick Kearney, who was our last speaker, because he's really into gaming as well. Marco, thank you very much. I'm going to go find somebody else to talk to. So many people around here. Can I just ask you what your thoughts are on education so far?
sorry, my voice is really bad. No, thank you.
Oh, somebody with a bad voice. Sorry, can I talk to somebody here about online education? Can you tell me your name?
My name's Marco.
Another Marco. We've just had a Marco.
Okay.
And where's this Marco from?
I'm from the Netherlands.
And what are you hoping to get out of Educa, Marco?
Seeing a bit more about the current trends, what's going on, especially on the business side. So the business Educa is my primary interest.
And what's your own business?
I'm working for Drillster, which is an online adaptive learning tool, which is based on scientific research. It's based for memorization, so knowledge anchoring, knowledge retention.
And are you booked to do any of the sessions here? Are you looking forward to any particular session?
Well, I made my own program to see which sessions I would like to attend. So many of them are business related. So just went started off with the primary session and doing the rest then.
Excellent. Marco, thank you very much indeed. I'm now going to go over to the Cross Cultural A Academy. Could you tell people what your name is? Yeah, just give us your name.
My name's Jacob.
And Jacob, what are you doing at Online Educa?
We are papagaya.com, a video learning system.
And can you tell people what that's about briefly?
It's about learning videos with fun, motivated, and exactly fitted for your business.
Tell people what the name of your store is so they can come and see if they're interested.
Excuse me?
Can you tell people where you are and how they can contact you?
We're in Hannover. You can just come to stand. I don't know which number it is here. Just to our stand, papagaya.com, and we will show you our portal.
Mark, thank you very much. I'm still walking across the bar looking for more people that I can talk to about Online Educa 2013. Do you think I can interrupt you? Just a moment. No, nobody wants to talk to me. Sorry, could I talk to you for 2 minutes? Can I just ask you what your name is?
My name is Christina Poloni.
And what brings you to Educa Online?
I would like to discover more about tablet and iPhone technology. So I'm interested in learning technology.
Are you a teacher? Is that why you're interested?
No, but I am designing programs for UNHCR, learning programs.
And have you been to any sessions so far? Did you go to the opening?
No, I will attend the session about tablets at 11:45. That's the first session.
Good luck. Thank you very much for talking to us. Bigfoot, racketeer, rabbit. Same old, same fire.
Charlie Parker, Marcus Garvey, Sugar Ray Robinson. Limited time only, chewing on your gum, make your mouth taste like onion. Same old riding on the wall, same old star. face so. X-ray glasses, smoke bowl, dust bowl. Number one, number two, number three, all the young can get. Same old.
Okay, it's now me asking some people about the online. Sorry, can I ask you something? What are you expecting on the online Educa today?
Meeting many, many people and learning a lot of stuff that I didn't know before.
And what do you want to learn?
Pretty much anything about what universities do.
Okay, thank you. And you?
I'm trying to see as many people before I leave and then not to be crashing in the storm with my plane in about 2 hours.
Okay. The big storm is a big topic in Berlin today. What do you want to take when you're at home? What do you want to have left if when you arrive at home from online Educa and content?
An understanding of the key challenges in education in Europe.
Okay, and why are you interested in them?
Because we work for Blackboard. We're the worldwide leader in the education sector.
Okay, and you're waiting for getting the key challenges solved.
Yeah, and we're having.
Okay, so I will leave you alone. Make the solutions. I'm taking the next one. Excuse me, please. Can I ask you something? Why are you here at Online Educa?
Why not?
Okay. Tell us our listeners of the radio station.
I planned this to go there for several years. But it's sort of December and you get sort of tired. But I'm here to start, kickstart a mock course at my university.
Okay. And what do you want to take when you are arriving at home from the conference here?
I'm hoping to get some good ideas that will improve my teaching or maybe learning.
Okay. Is he a teacher?
Yes. Yes.
At university?
Yes. Music, I teach oral training, ear training at university.
Okay, thank you very much and have a nice day.
And I'm talking now to Liombi Sembo, who's from the Ministry of Education in Uganda.
ICT.
Say that again.
A minister of ICT, Republic of Uganda. Yeah.
And what brings you to Educa?
We're here mainly to share experiences with colleagues, especially in e-learning and e-education. But most importantly, we are hosting the e-learning Africa next year. So mainly we have come to benchmark to see how a conference of this magnitude can be organized. And of course, use the opportunity to invite people who may be interested to travel to Africa, more particularly to Uganda, to attend the e-learning Africa 2014.
Yeah. And what are the dates? Tell us the dates in loudly. Tell everybody the dates.
The dates will be May 9th to 16th, 2014. Yeah.
What I'm really interested in, because I heard a lot about Online Africa last year, and listen to some of the podcasting, what I'm really interested in are the lessons that eLearning Africa have got to bring here to Edgecore Online in Berlin.
Yeah, mainly, you know, that what's happening in Africa today, all African countries have decided to go for university education. And you know, university education is such a very, very expensive venture, but we feel that technology is providing opportunities on how we can reduce costs to reach everybody. So whenever we get every opportunity to see how other colleagues or other countries have done it, we try as much as we can to get this opportunity to see how we can scale up our e-learning initiatives to ensure that we reached everybody. We've seen from the stalls here that a lot of technologies have been developed, a lot of approaches have been developed. So we think amongst these initiatives and technologies, we can choose those which are most appropriate and suited to African situation to see how we can reach the majority of our people.
Yeah. That's great. But I'm really interested in what lessons we can learn from you. What have you been doing
that's interesting that we can learn from? Sure. We've done a lot. A lot is happening in Uganda when it comes to e-learning, and we are ready to showcase what we've done. For example, for us, we've done what we'd call a bottom-up. We've started with secondary schools. Uganda is a developing country, a poor country at that. But out of the 1,000 secondary schools in the country, I think we've been able to cover close to 96% of these schools with the computer labs. What we are doing today, we are putting in science content. We found out recently that science teachers are very few, and they don't want to go to rural areas. So what we've done, we've put science content on these computers, chemistry, biology, mathematics, and physics. The students can now virtually teach themselves from virtual labs or on these computers. And this has immensely changed the way science is taught in our country. Actually, the schools that have this science content are now performing far much better than those schools where we haven't been able to put this content. And it's changing the way science is taught in the country. And we are going to benchmark to showcase this, especially to our fellow developing countries, come May next year.
I think it's a brilliant achievement, and it's something which most European countries could certainly learn from.
Yeah, sure.
I want to ask you one more question, because when I'm actually not doing the radio, I've got a proper job, which is training teachers, particularly primary teachers. Yeah. How young are the children when they start using technology?
Come again?
How young are the children, your children in Uganda, when they start using technology?
These days, with the introduction of the mobile handsets, it depends on the level of the family income. For example, my own children, by the time that they are 8, they're already using laptops. But of course, I have some little means. On average, I think 13-year-olds, that's when they are able to enter secondary school. And when they enter government secondary school, definitely they will start interfacing with a computer. But when it comes to at a family level, it depends on the income level of the family. But on average, at least around 13, 14 years, that's when they start using computers, especially when they join secondary school.
The other thing I'm curious about are the languages. What languages do you actually use in Uganda, showing how terribly ignorant I am about the country?
The official language is English. That's what we use. But we have a regional language called Swahili. If you can speak French, and a few secondary schools also offer German. Yeah.
So, but the software that you're using is English language software?
English language software. English language. Yeah, mainly. In fact, in secondary schools, 100% is English language, because English is a constitutional language, the official language in my country. Yeah.
Do you have to localize the software very much? Because although it's in English, it's obviously written for kind of an American or Western European cultural context. Is that difficult?
Yeah, we are trying now to start to localize the content, especially our partners like Google. have assisted us, you find that some content now has been transformed into Swahili and a mainly spoken language in our country called Luganda. So, but in the education system, we still use English as the medium of exchange.
That's brilliant. Thank you very, very much talking to me. I really want to get to Africa next year. Last year to go to Namibia.
Yes,
last
and you're
year.
There?
No, I didn't make it.
Oh, please, come to Uganda. And I think you've heard that this is the Pearl of Africa, Lake Victoria. This is the source of the River Nile, the longest river in the world. And of course, you know, Lake Victoria is the biggest, I think, freshwater lake in the world. So there's a lot to see in Uganda. A lot to see to Uganda. We will be more than happy to see you there.
Try and persuade my boss to pay for it. Go on, tell him to pay for it.
We'll have to. It's worth the dollar that we should be paid, or the euros. Please come to Uganda.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Paris, France, you can make no noise. You're down in the bar with your best boys. When your girls at the holiday get shown the door. In Paris, France, you can make no noise. You can't make no noise. Get in a pocket and the folks start to dance. We can get the house rocking, but don't make no racket. In Paris, France, you can't make no noise. No.
And now Anchorman is interviewing Anchorwoman about the Tackle project. And tell me about it.
I'm not sure I like this reversal of roles here. It doesn't feel at all right. The Tackle project, which started with Tackle One about 5 years ago, is about producing materials and resources for classroom teachers. Very, very simple idea. There's absolutely nothing clever about it. It is literally a series of handbooks and two websites which host content for teachers. It's not a repository of materials, it's a repository of ideas. Ideas like 101 things you can do with Twitter with 8-year-olds, or 43 ways of using podcasts with 7th grade. That's the whole idea of Tackle. It's instant ideas for teachers.
Okay. What does it mean for the students? What are your observations? Because I know you're hardly working with all the teachers in the project. Get them involved and get them active and make them using all the stuff. What's your inspiration on, or your aspiration on how students are picking this up?
Well, I work a lot with the young people themselves. I work particularly with primary schools because we have just finished the Tackle Primary Teachers book. So it's about using e-technology with 3 to 11-year-olds. And I can tell you some anecdotes about this. I mean, one of the things that we found was that we gave a whole group of kids with kind of special needs, learning difficulties, reluctant readers, I think is the current terminology, and we gave them Kindles. And the teachers we were working with said they'd never seen anything make such a dramatic improvement. And I think part of the reason was that these kids are scared of books. They're 10 years old and they can't read. So they actually associate printed books with something they can't do. So we gave them Kindles. And one of the things that we experimented with, they could choose the page orientation, they could choose the typeface, the font, the type size. And they actually, for the first time, felt in control of the thing they were reading rather than it controlling them. We allowed them to turn on the speech function if they got tired. We used the markup function so they could underline words they didn't understand and so on. And in 6 weeks, they'd actually achieved a whole learning level higher in reading.
Okay. What are the teachers thinking about your activities and how do they pick it up? Can you provide an example for our listeners?
Yeah, this sounds really cynical, but you know, what all teachers love when they go on a training course is they want a Christmas stocking full of ideas that they can do with eight-year-olds in history tomorrow morning, and that's what we give them. So teachers love going away with new bits of social software, free bits of social software. That's really important. For a teacher, especially a primary teacher, anything which is free, instant, accessible, requires no setup, is what they actually like best, things that make their job easier.
Okay. Now, let's have a bit of new music, and the next interview guest is waiting, and Jen will do the interview.
Hiya, Shay. Really good to see you again. I think the last time we met was actually on the panel radio show, Any Questions, last year here in Berlin.
I think it was 2011. That was good fun. Are you doing one this time as well?
We're not doing one this year, primarily because Graham is not very well. So this is why I'm doing it, in fact. But hey, we were talking earlier, and you said you were actually in the business now of training teachers about e-learning.
Well, for the last few years, I've been involved more and more in teacher professional development. So it's taking my ideas of design-based research, learning design, and thinking about how we make them accessible to educational practitioners. You know, taking those ideas out of the research world and putting them into practice. So I've been doing it through various master's programs, but more recently looking more at workshops, practitioner workshops. And one of the frameworks which is happening is the METIS project. So the METIS is a European lifelong learning program project, and we're developing an integrated learning design environment, which means we're bringing together a lot of the representation and tools that are out there for learning design, putting them under a unified social envelope so that practitioners can choose the representation and tools that appeal to them, but also share whatever they produce in these tools and comment on each other's work. Now that's a bit, you know, it's a steep learning curve for a lot of educators, so we're also building a framework of workshops, kind of inducing people into the practice of learning design. So we've been running some workshops with staff at the Open University. We're also running workshops with a community adult learning organization in Barcelona, with the professional development organization in Greece, and we're looking for more partners. If you hear about anyone who's interested in that kind of thing, tell them to contact us. Well, there you go. So you just sign up for the METIS project, and it's metis-project.eu, I think, or, well, anyway, Google it, METIS, M-E-T-I-S. And we're getting really good feedback. I think, you know, part of the trouble with learning design so far was that it was perceived, that's an interesting approach. It could be useful, but I'm not sure how to put it into practice. Our approach is we start from what it is you want to do, what is the change that you want to bring about in your classroom. And then we lead you through a process of conceptualizing that change, understanding the environment in which you're working, looking at similar innovations which have worked in other in similar contexts, prototyping, and then eventually authoring and deploying a solution to your VLE. So the ILD supports all those modes of learning design, right from the initial idea up to deployment to the VLE. The workshop structure which we're developing supports professional development in using those tools and in adapting those approaches. All the resources we produce, of course, are OVRs, so you can download the workshop guide and work through it yourself, or you can contact us and we can run a workshop with you.
Is this all sectors of education, or is this higher education, vocational ed? Where are you focusing?
Well, at the moment, we're working with three groups. One is higher education, distance education, that's the OU. One is adult community learning, so that was Agora School in Barcelona. It's an amazing project. If you ever visit Barcelona, look up Agora and visit them.
Tell us about it now. Go on, tell us about Agora.
Well, because I just visited them a couple of weeks ago, and it's in a sort of deprived neighborhood. It was set up by a group of community activists who said, we have a serious problem of adult literacy here. We want to set up our own school, and we want it to be completely democratic. So every course in that school is voted for by the school community. They decide on the curriculum. They decide on the teaching design, on the learning design of the courses. They have some courses which are preparing people for certification, people who dropped out of school. They were preparing for their qualification exam, preparing for university entry exam. But also, if you want to learn Chinese or if you want to learn basic Spanish as an immigrant, they have courses for that. We're working with them, and because of the democratic nature of Agora, we had to adapt our workshops. Our workshops initially were aimed at educators who are designing learning experiences for their learners. Agora said, that's not the way we work. Here, it's a collaborative, participatory process where the learners and the teachers design the learning experiences together. Said, fine, we'll go with that. So we have both the learners and the teachers involved in designing their new courses at Agora. And for me, that's a very exciting thing to be involved. I mean, I'm not involved directly in those workshops, but I think that one of our most fascinating partners. Another partner is KEK Euro Training in Greece, and they're a professional development, vocational development organization. They have people who sort of bid to run courses, and if they're accepted, they get the funding and they get the resources to run the course within the KEK training centers. So what we're offering people, their trainers, is an opportunity to improve the quality of their teaching and obviously improve the quality of their bids by going through this learning design process.
I'm interested in this. There's one just polemic thing I've got to talk to you about, because I work a lot with teachers, but mainly primary teachers and secondary teachers. Mm-hmm. And I hate VLEs, and I hate the whole learning object approach, and I hate the resource-driven approach, because we use mainly social software, and we're saying, just abandon your VLEs. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think I can see where you're coming from, because most VLEs push us towards a content-centric design. Whereas I think learning design is really about focusing on activities. So, we learn through doing things. We learn through experiences. Now, just consuming content is a very poor kind of experience. It is an experience, but it's a very poor one. Whereas if you're producing content, if you're sharing, if you're discussing it, if you go out and find things and then debate it with your fellow learners, it's a much more powerful experience. You can do that within Moodle, but the way it's built really drives you towards a sort of content production mode. And that's what we're trying to pull people away from. We're trying to say, first of all, have a good idea of what it is you want to change, who are your learners, and then kind of think about what are the activities which would drive that change, how will you evaluate it, how will you measure your success, and probably one of the last things you do is you create the contact that suits you. Now, ILD is built to deploy to Moodle, but you can also deploy to Wiki. you can deploy to just Google Docs, or you can produce documents which you then use in face-to-face education. I've been using Moodle actually as a platform to support face-to-face activity-based training. I've been running a few workshops. I ran a workshop on designing MOOCs in Barcelona. We ran a workshop yesterday here. So we used Moodle just as a way of making the resources and activities available for learners after they leave the classroom, right? But really getting away from the content-driven approach. I think, I've worked with some of the courses I taught were with primary and secondary teachers. So I use a sort of learning design studio approach and training teachers to use game-based learning, mobile learning. Again, working through a project of their definition. So teachers would work in a team on a learning design project. They identify a challenge. They think about ways they can address that challenge, in those cases, either with mobile learning or game-based learning. But it could be any sort of theme that you choose. And they go through a semi-structured process of conceptualizing, prototyping, evaluating, refining their solution. I used Google Sites as a platform for that. You could use a VLE. You could use whatever suits you. So I think the platform itself, again, should be secondary. You need to think about the pedagogy first, then the platform, then the content.
Yishay, not only have to stop you, but I really, really want to talk to you some more, not on air maybe, but if we can find a couple of minutes during this conference just to sit down and have a coffee, because there's so much stuff we could be exchanging here. It'll be absolutely brilliant. Thank you very much, and please come back next year.
Thank you. I will try to, and I'll take you up on that coffee. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Yishay. And that's it from Sounds of the Bazaar for today. Join us again tomorrow, same time, same place, 11 o'clock. Meanwhile, at 12:15, tune in to Radioactive.
Let's go out to the restaurant, baby. The world cooks are all right here in Paris. Some say it smells funny and it's too much spice, but that's all right by me. Some like cuisine, bon says it, no, it's true. And compé day, we can check our pogues. Pour économiser, mangeons étrangers.